Hey, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of No Filter Sports Podcast. I'm Bob Page, sitting in this chair, the host chair for Eli Zarrett, who's off today. And as usual, joined by Danny McClain, Major League Baseball's last 30-game winner, and another outstanding right-handed Major League pitcher from the past, Larry Sorensen of Mount Clemens out of the University of Michigan. So we record this on Thursday morning. The Masters is or was underway. They did have a rain delay early, but I checked the weather forecast. It's supposed to be pretty good for the weekend. It shouldn't be a problem. And to celebrate this November Masters, we're going to have Dan Pohl on today. And for you younger people, if you don't know who Danny is, he's a great interview. He's a great guy, and what a golfer he was. So we're going to talk to him about playing in the Masters. He lost in a playoff in 1982 to Craig Stadler. And when you think about it, and I was kicking this around with Danny and with Brandon and with Larry earlier today, the greatest golfer Michigan has ever produced. So I did some research on that. I remember from watching TV in my boyhood, Walter Bercamo. He was from Fenton, sure. Best known for winning the PGA Championship in 1953. Dave Hill, born in Jackson, Michigan.
Yep.
He attended the University of Detroit. I'm sure you know most of these guys, Danny, maybe you played.
Bercamo had a driving range over on the east side in Roseville.
Yeah, that's right. He did, didn't he? Yeah. So Dave Hill was born in Jackson. He actually went to the University of Detroit, and he played on the golf team. He won 13 times on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, he was a good player.
He sure was. Three of which came during his career year of 1969 when he won the Vardon Trophy for lowest scoring average member of United States Ryder Cup teams. And I don't know if you remember this. Again, Danny, I suspect you knew him. Dave Hill was known for his wit and biting sarcasm. Yeah. He was sometimes referred to as the Don Rickles of the PGA Tour. He frequently led the tour in fines and was once suspended for 2 months after he deliberately broke his putter on national television. Now think of this. Calvin Pete, one of the first great black players, was born in Detroit. He grew up there until he was nine. He moved away. So it's going to be fun to talk to Dan and to hear about his near win in the 82 Masters and see what he thinks about Bryson DeChambeau and who might win this year's Masters. Yeah.
Wasn't Hagen from Michigan?
You know, that's a good question. Actually, no. He's associated with that because he was a club pro. No, yes. Yeah. And he was, I think, a club pro at one of the big clubs. But he did not grow up in Detroit. He's not from Michigan. The Hague. I remember that when I was a kid. Well, boys, just like Steve Martin and Dan Aykroyd, we're a couple of wild and crazy guys. The internet is a wild and crazy place. Eli sent me a story from a website, I don't know, written by a guy, I don't know, in support of what seems to me to be a ridiculous notion Eli broached on the show the other day, Urban Meyer as Michigan coach replacing Jim Harbaugh. Now, this story that Eli sent me is nothing more than a rumor. And the story itself admits that. It says, quote, numerous people with ties to Michigan football, including a very influential booster, are rumored to be finalizing a plan to pursue Urban and blah, 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 preparing an offer expected to be in the ballpark of roughly, ready for this, boys? College football coach, $12 million per season. Your thoughts?
It's not enough. I'm going to tell you, I would love to have him here. I mean, he's a winner. He's always been a winner. He knows what he's doing. He's knowledgeable. He has this innate ability to identify good players. I mean, that's something that not everybody has. Even if you're a coach, you don't have that innate ability to tell if a guy is going to be a pretty good athlete or not. So listen, if they want my vote, I'll go pick him up and bring him back.
Let's talk to a University of Michigan graduate here and a former Michigan athlete. Yeah.
You know,
go ahead, Larry.
The thing about Urban Meyer is that he's one of those guys that walks into a room and changes the atmosphere of a room.
Yes.
You know, Bo Schembechler was like that. He walked in and the whole dynamic of the room changed.
Yeah.
And he has that something that appeals to people, and he gets people to do more than they knew that they were capable of doing somehow, along with the ability to identify skill and talent and piece it all together. The money's immaterial. I mean, the money's so big. Yeah. 12 million, 8 million, 6 million, you know, what the heck's the difference? They're not giving it just like...
And he doesn't need it anyway, of course.
Just like in the other sports, you know, if somebody's willing to pay it, it means they've got it. And so they're willing to pay it. And so from that aspect, it doesn't matter. I worry about his health, you know, the burnout factor, which he said.
Yeah, I know that. But Larry, you're talking.
But if it's on the internet, it must be.
No. Wait. Is there any, has there ever been a coach who is coached both as a head coach for the Wolverines and the Buckeyes?
I don't know.
No, of course, a lot of the Michigan coaches had Ohio State backgrounds, but no, you're right.
Yeah, and Bo had a big Ohio background.
Sure, and I saw him in an interview, I don't know, a year or two ago in Columbus. We were doing a show over there, and they did a blip, you know, a quick little 30-second piece on the Saturday night news. And he said he would never wear a Michigan. They asked him point blank, would you ever, because a lot of craziness was going on at Ohio State at the time. And he said, would you ever go to Michigan to coach a football team? He said, I would never put a Michigan cap on. So we avoided answering the question.
Hey, Chris Chelio said the same thing. He said, I will never be a Red Wing. I will never go to Detroit when he was in Chicago. And look what happened.
You never know about that. Larry, I want to jump on something.
Never say never.
It's called Larry, Benjamin Franklin's. Benjamin Franklin is a wonderful person.
Well, okay, then that's what Sorensen just said. Larry, I want to jump on that remark that you made. Well, if they're going to give him the money. I only went to Michigan State, but you matriculated at one of the truly great academic and research institutions in the entire world, the University of Michigan. Is this a business? Is this a professional sports team when you have brilliant professors trying to change our world at Michigan? And, well, if they're going to give the guy $12 million to coach a football team? I don't know, Larry. I don't think that sounds too good.
Does it have to be either or? I mean, does the chemistry department not benefit from alumni that donate to the university because they love the fact that the football team wins, or the basketball team just signed 2 5-star players that look like Juwan Howard's going to make that basketball team a force starting next year again?
I know. It helps women's sports.
It helps every place. It helps the reputation of the program around the world.
Yeah, okay.
On a world basis. I accept that.
Well, Urban was actually born in Toledo. He grew up in Ashtabula, which is in the far, far northeast corner of Ohio. I did not know this about Urban Meyer. Did you two boys? 3 with Brandon McAfee, our producer. Urban Meyer was selected in the 13th round of the 1982 Major League Baseball draft by the Atlanta Braves as a shortstop, and he played 2 seasons of minor league baseball in the Braves organization. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
I did not know that.
He is a job hopper, fellas. He said he had health problems at Florida. Then
somebody in the broadcast business is calling other people job hoppers.
Zarrett and I, and you to a lesser degree, we were job hoppers because we get fired. We don't want to be job hoppers. We get fired. So anyway, when Urban left Florida, there were health issues, supposedly, right? And it made him feel much better when he got the Ohio State job. 31 of Urban Meyer's players were arrested during his 6 years as the Gators coach. You heard me, 31. The seriousness of the charges varied widely, from minor offenses such as possession of alcohol by a minor to the charges of possession of a concealed weapon, aggravated stalking.
Boys being boys.
Yeah, now, many of the charges were ultimately dismissed. So, I mean, he's still only 56. Doesn't it seem as though Urban Meyer is much older? Do you people put any credence to this whatsoever? In the real world, could Urban Meyer become head coach of the University of Michigan?
I don't think it'll ever happen, but I certainly would love to see it. I think it'd be nice to have somebody with a resume that's second to none. I mean, literally second to none.
Except for Saban.
It's not going to happen.
All right, Larry, what do you think about that?
I don't think that it'll happen, but there aren't many people out there more qualified.
Right.
Well, except, with Saban and the Hall of Fame, Rushmore of current college coaches. Okay, now, the funeral dirge is continuing for Jim Harbaugh Saturday night on national TV. Michigan's playing Wisconsin. So, Larry Sorensen, if Michigan wins, does that take some pressure off Jimmy, or is he a goner at this point no matter what?
I don't think the decision has been made. I think they'll evaluate the rest of the season.
It hasn't been made technically, but I'm asking you in your opinion. Is he a goner no matter what?
He wants to pile up some wins the rest of the way, I guarantee.
We know that too.
I do not think the decision has been made to fire him, no.
Larry, answer my question. In your opinion, is he a goner now no matter what? We know the decision hasn't been made.
That's a good question.
Well, it calls for a yes or no.
Yeah, in my opinion, yes, he will be gone.
Yeah,
in my
really?
Opinion,
I think so,
yes,
too.
Yes, he will be gone, yeah.
I think so, too.
I think I think that it might not be a bad decision. I think it's time for a change. And
He's in his last year of his contract, right?
No, next
last,
year.
I think he's next got one year, more. One more, yeah. one more. But there's some weird rolling clause in it, too.
He'll be here next year.
And they keep talking about, I don't agree with that, Denny, but we'll see what happens.
I really believe it. They just don't have that history of firing people.
Yeah, what's Mr.
That, yeah. And the other thing is how much money the university has lost in the sports program because of the pandemic and everything else.
Sure, you know,
they had to let 100 people go in the athletic department, I think, or maybe even more now. Yeah. So how do you justify taking a hit on the salary that he earns to not coach when you're letting people go right and left?
And Larry, think about this. Because of what happened in East Lansing with the Nassar scandal, Michigan State's going to pay out millions and millions and millions. They already have of dollars in awards. Michigan, the same thing because of the Dr. Anderson sexual assault scandal. They're going to be on the hook for millions in damages. How are they going to pay $12 million to Urban unless one of the big shooters comes in and writes them a check, which is probably illegal?
They'll find a way. They'll find a way.
All right. Michigan State has sudden Big 14 powerhouse Indiana at home in a noon kickoff on Saturday. Ohio State, Maryland's already been canceled. Big game between Alabama and LSU canceled, among a number of other games due to COVID-19. Now, among several very worthy nominations for the NFL's crummy game of the week, the FL's host Washington on Sunday. Detroit looks like it's playing out the string on the latest disastrous season and the latest head coach. But, fellas, did you see this? As we record this show, all 32 NFL teams are technically still alive for a playoff berth. Yes, including the 0-9 Jets. If the FLs win this game, and they should beat Washington, they'd be 4-5 with 14 teams making the postseason. How do you like them apples, especially Brandon, with that garish Detroit Lions shirt you're wearing in the studio today?
Oh, hey, well, you know, if they get an extra one because of missing games, you also have to understand that we will be missing football games due to that, but they will add another playoff team, and I just don't see the Lions. I don't see Matt Patricia leading this team no matter what. If they barely back into it, I don't see the Lions, A, getting there, B, performing if they do get there, and C, I don't want to see them get the playoffs because I don't want Matt Patricia to get another year.
my humble nomination for next head coach, latest head coach,
Urban Meyer.
No, listen to this. tell me you don't love this guy. Corey Undlin is the Lions defensive coordinator. So yeah. Tuesday in a news conference this past week, he whispered, "There it is," while he was asked to explain how the hell his defense had been caught with only 10 players on the field for the second straight week. And Corey said, "It's embarrassing is what it is. I would say this, it's just poor, poor coaching. That's what it is," end quote. I love that guy's honesty. Wouldn't it be great if more Lions head coaches would stand up and say, I'm a horse manure coach. But you don't see it happen that often, do you?
Well, they don't even need to say that. We can see it.
What do you have to do to get fired around here?
Exactly, as Daryl Rogers once asked. So
the Lions have got a couple things going on, and this is this is not in cement, by the way. According to the bookmakers, 53% of the percentage in Vegas says the Lions are going to win Sunday. What do you think of that? And the reason why they said that is because they've got four games coming up that none of the teams they're playing have got a winning record. So they think that Detroit can win four games in a row. If they win four games, no, I'm not going to say that. No. I'm not going to drink that.
It's possible. You know, they're all eligible. Yeah, they all still have life. But, you know differently. Denny, I don't know if you played in on any teams, but I played on some teams where we used to say we were mathematically eliminated opening day.
Yeah, I was on the Washington Senators, Larry. Yeah,
there you go. You looked at your roster and you said, we ain't got a chance.
No, I looked at my roster and I said, where in the hell am I?
Boy, you know, every year when I covered the Tigers for 15 years, of course, they had the media day, you know. And, of course, you know, we knew we had a lot of bad ball clubs. But you need to go down there. My first year was 74. Denny, unfortunately, was gone. But, God, I was on the field. I got to interview K-Line and I interviewed Cash and everybody. Wouldn't it have been great if sometimes guys would have said, you know what, fellas, we got a crap team this year. We got no chance to win. But nobody ever told me that. For some reason or another. You know, Tony Romo is not going to be offering his commentary during any NFL game this Sunday because his CBS broadcast partner, Jim Nantz, you know what a golf wacko Nantz is, he's going to work the Masters. Yeah. For whatever reason, the empty suits running CBS will not add Tony Romo to another broadcast team. They're not going to pair him with anybody else. They ain't even going to put him back in the studio, despite paying him more than $1 million per Sunday. Denny, you're an ex-musician and an organ player from the older generation. What did Mel Torme used to sing about that?
Mel Torme said, "How much is that dog?"
No. I got to tell you what Mel Torme sang about that. Nice work if you can get it. $1 million for sitting around for Tony Romo this coming Sunday.
Why does the money irritate you?
You know, I don't understand that part of it, but I don't know why they wouldn't use him for the golf. And Tony's a hell of a golfer too.
Oh, right? I know that. Oh, yeah.
You know, so it doesn't make any sense. But you know, the suits are the suits, and they make the decisions that affect all of us.
Yeah, I wonder what Tony's going to be doing. I bet he could be watching the Masters.
Remember that shot that he hit off the roof of that clubhouse? Last year sometime?
Romo, when he was trying to qualify for a tour event, yeah.
And he was on the roof, and he hit it off and onto the green, kind of like Rahm did with the hole-in-one at at the par three the other day.
Yeah.
Was the weirdest shot I've ever seen, by the way, that hole-in-one that Rahm hit.
It's great.
I cannot imagine standing essentially in the figurative sense naked on a pitching mound in Major League Baseball with millions on national TV and 50,000 in the stands and trying to throw a ball to the plate. You guys both played golf, too, and Denny was a really good golfer. What's more difficult? Was it more difficult to play golf, or was it more difficult to pitch at the Major League level?
Well, I think I got, I could never say that I could play on the regular
tour. If you worked at it, then,
what I wanted to do when I got out of baseball is I wanted to get my game up to a status number one and then start to go out and start to play and get ready to play the seniors tour. I thought I could play on the seniors tour at one time, but it was not meant to be. But as far as the game, we made... You know, with all due respect, and there's 1,000 stories behind what I'm going to say, we just made too much money with these games all over Florida. Everybody wanted to go get the pitcher. Everybody wanted to bring cash to the pitcher and ask the pitcher, "Hey, we'll play. Give us one aside. Give us two aside, whatever." You know, and we never said no. Ever said no. I mean, because there's a big difference between a guy who works in an insurance office all day and tries to make a putt at number 18, right? A 4-footer, 3-footer, then just walking out there. It's not that easy.
Are you referring to the sphincter effect?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk to those guys now, and not just now, but I mean back in the day too. You know, the pro golfers, they're just at a whole different level. They talk about the different kinds of grass they play off of and the different way the wind is blowing the grass when they're getting ready to hit the ball. And there's so many factors that they absorb into what they do the same way that any professional athlete or any professional broadcaster or anybody that's at the very top level of their profession does. There's so much more goes into it than the average person looking from the outside knows about it.
Larry, you were a hell of a pitcher, obviously. Not such a good golfer. What was more difficult? What's more difficult to do, throw a pitch baseball at the level you did or play golf?
Oh, no question playing golf. You know, I tried to play all three sports because that way I wouldn't have to have a part-time job in Mount Clemens. And so I tried to do a little bit of everything. And basketball actually was my better sport until about my junior, senior year in high school and then baseball.
Well, with your size, you would have been a hell of a defenseman. And you're from Hockey Town. You never played hockey?
Didn't play hockey except for those 3 o'clock in the morning where you rented the Gordie Howe rink over in Fraser and everybody got up and went over there. But, you know, with my big butt, I could block people out in the basketball court. So
you block the whole rink.
I could get some rebounds.
Well, folks, we got another up down seesaw day going in the market. And so with so much uncertainty out there, we don't even have a president of the United States, technically speaking, as we record this. So we want you to allow Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies to help you plan for your future family obligations and your own retirement. Luke's track record of success and decades of experience is going to enable him to create a custom solution for you or your business. Call Luke. I'm going to give you a number again. It's 248-663-4748 to set up a complimentary consultation. And then if you feel comfortable with the plan he lays out for you, let him do his thing. This plan is going to fit your individual needs. He knows what you are going to need for your retirement, for your business, for your family. He's ethical. He's knowledgeable. He's caring. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Again, that number is 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And mortgage rates are still at all-time lows. If your current mortgage rate is above 3.9%, Hall Financial simply asks, what are you waiting for? You could be saving money right now. And currently at Hall Financial, almost 70% of all loans don't even require an appraisal. If for some reason your loan does, for this month of November only, Hall Financial will pay that appraisal charge for you up to $500. Remarkably, closing times have now sped up even more. Right now, the majority of loans at Hall Financial are closing in just 10 or fewer business days. So just go to our website, nofiltersportspodcast.com, and you click on the Hall Financial link. You'll see it in front of you. That gets you started. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, and more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So, boys, let's go to your bailiwick. We see now that $18.9 million is not enough to play baseball for 1 year for former Birmingham Bubba
Why
Rice
does
standout.
Money irritate you so much? What difference does it make to you, Bob? Why does that annoy you?
Here's what I think. First of all, not only are you asking me a good question, it's one that Eli has asked me, that Denny has asked me, but not anybody else has asked me. And you know why they haven't? Because the people listening to this show right now, most of them are making 40, 60, 70 grand a year. They can't pay their bills. They're trying to support their families, hopefully saving for their college education of their kids. And they're being asked to pay, Larry, paid these exorbitant prices to get into see professional sports.
Bob, we have nothing to do with that. Not a thing. That. I mean, it's not our problem.
But Larry, do you see where I'm coming from?
Bob, I do.
I know where you're coming from. I understand it. I can feel it. But you know what? You got Major League Baseball players who want to be the best they can, and they want to make as much money as they can for obvious reasons, right? I mean, and you got other athletes in other sports that want to do the same thing. So you can't blame the players for taking the
money. I don't. I don't blame the players. But all I'm saying, Larry just says, and maybe I do harp on this too much, Larry. I'm going to grant you that. And we'll probably get letters in the mailbag on this. But I just look at this, and especially now with COVID, what it's done to our economy, how people are suffering. And you see an athlete saying no to $19 million for 1 year to play a game we all played as kids to one degree or another. That's
Bob,
all.
Maybe his
wife lives in Texas. Maybe his wife's from Texas, and he wants to go be with his family.
This is the
route that he's got to go to get there.
Well, what you guys you're referring to DJ LeMahieu, but it's also worth noting that
who's from Michigan,
JT Realmuto, George Springer. These are three guys that turned down an 18.9 qualifying offer.
Right,
is also three guys who are at the pinnacle, the top of their positions right
yes,
now.
They
JT
are.
Realmuto is considered the best hitting catcher in the game. George Springer, the best power leadoff outfielder in the game. And then, of course, DJ LeMahieu, who a lot of people didn't think was that great. They thought that his hitting was because of a very good park out there in Colorado.
Yeah,
and so
right.
He goes over to the Yankees, and he leads that team. He wins what? Back-to-back batting titles? Or at least I think he became the first player to win it in both leagues. And this kid, I think that he knew, hey, if I become a free agent, I can get more than 18.9 million dollars. Why not? He's 32 years old. He doesn't have a lot of contracts left. I say go get it.
Okay.
Well, he's 32 years old, so he's at the end of his career because 32 is getting to be old. And let's go back to paying your dues. And he's a Brother Rice kid, by the way.
Wait a minute, Larry. Yeah. As long as a guy hits 300 every year, they're not going to get rid of him. I mean, the bottom line is the money goes exactly towards what does he do this year.
I don't think we're arguing this. Let's
go back to the basics, though. Let's go back to the initial process of a club drafts you. You have no choice who you play for the first 6 years of your career. So you're a 22-year-old kid coming out of college, and, Bob, they say to you, we want you to start in Traverse City. And we're going to keep you in Traverse City as long as we want you in Traverse City.
The money they're going to pay me to go to Traverse City, which they do. I say, damn right, I'm going for the money you're going to pay me, as they do in baseball. Hell yes, I'm going.
They're paying you $500 a month when you
well,
start
that's,
in Kansas City.
Okay. Back in then, Traverse in your City. Day. In your
now,
day. Yeah.
Now they're paying about $1,200 a month to
yeah,
go
except
play
for
in
the,
Traverse
except
City.
For the kids who are getting bonuses of $10, $15 million, never having faced a major league pitcher.
The top 30 guys are going to get $1 million. The rest of them, you start scaling down, okay?
Yeah.
The next year, you hit 300, 330, whatever, and they say, we think you need another year in Traverse City, and we're going to pay you, instead of the 1200, we're going to pay you 1300, and you've got to take that. They have 6 years of control of your life. Now, let's say that at the end of 5 years, you're ready to go to the major leagues, and they say, we're going to bring you to the major leagues. They now have another 6 years of your life. So now you started at 22, you're 27. They've got you till you're 32, and they've told you exactly where you have to play every single year from when you're 22 to 32. Yeah.
Okay, you went 18. You went 18-11 in your best season. You had a great year. What did they pay you that year, and what do they offer you for the next year?
I made 35 when I was when I went 18-12. Made the All Star team. Pitched three innings in the All Star game, and I had to take because I did not have arbitration rights. And we went until about the last day of spring training on the contract. I signed it in the office in spring training. I went to $95,000, so I got a $60,000 raise. And they said salaries like that, and I was the highest paid second year player in the American League, and they said salaries like that are going to put baseball out of business.
Yeah. So, you know, so we're not arguing. I totally understand where you're coming from, but if you'll understand me for a moment, I'm the only one of the four of us sitting here who's a member of the Woodstock generation with everything that entails. Call me a bleeding heart liberal. I happened to drive last night for a small social event. I drove from Palm Beach Island all the way down on A1A down here in South Florida to Fort Lauderdale, mansion after mansion after mansion. And I'm saying, my God, who are these people? How do they make this money at a time when there are kids in this country who go to bed hungry at night? That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you 100%, but fair market value for the skill set that they have dictates that that's what the pay scale is.
Right. I know. Yeah. Yep. Okay. So I want to ask you this about Trevor Bauer, who just won the National League Cy Young. Kind of funny. You know, he's the first Cincinnati Reds pitcher ever to win the Cy Young.
Yeah, so that struck me funny, didn't it?
Yeah. He's a controversial guy.
Yes,
some would call him, from your day, some would call him a clubhouse lawyer. He's got a huge presence on Twitter, very popular. He's got big opinions. He's got big talent, too. So, boys, you want him on your team? You want to buy him as a free agent, which he is, or is he too big a potential headache?
Is there any reason why we wouldn't want him to hold down our pitching staff and teach kids how to do this and to do that?
Is he the kind of guy who'd do that?
Absolutely. He's at the forefront of the technology craze. I talked to him in spring training about our Pitch Logic baseball.
And he's solidly into the mechanics of pitching. He's solidly into it.
Okay, so we want
him. The guy you'd love to have lead your pitching staff.
Okay,
now,
great.
You're going to have to put up with some baggage, make no mistake about it, but who amongst us does not have baggage?
Okay, and then that leads us to a question that I should have posed a moment ago. God, he's a Detroit kid. Do we want DJ LeMahieu playing for the Detroit Tigers because he's a free agent? You're damn right we do. Should they make any attempt to go after him, and would they have a chance to get him?
I think they got a shot at LeMahieu, and I'll tell you this, if they really are serious about running a baseball team and they're not cleaning it up to sell it, then they should also sign Springer. Let Springer come on the club. Now we got three aces on the field every night, and we got a ball club now. Now you got something to build around.
And don't forget A.J. Hinch. Hey, that guy, George Springer might love him. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation that Justin Verlander might come back for his final years, you know, when that finally happens because of his love for A.J. Hinch. A lot of people might come to Detroit with this manager. You never know.
Well, you never know.
I think pitchers will be attracted to Detroit because of the new pitching coach that they signed too, Chris.
Yeah, Hunter. I want to hear. Yeah, I want to hear.
I want to hear this. Did you tell me how a high school hairy coach can be a major league pitching coach overnight?
Denny, I think that if you met the guy, you would feel differently. He does have
a pro
background.
It's not that I don't like him. He may be a wonderful guy. He may do things at the church that are wonderful. He may drive older people to the voting booths and whatever else. But I just don't see a guy coming out of college and being a major league pitching coach.
He's got professional background. He played professionally, made it to the AA level. He's got scouting background. He's got front office background. And he's got on-the-field pitching coach background. Granted, it was at the University of Michigan. He was a AA pitching coach for a while.
Did you say
in the Padres organization?
Did you say he was a AA pitching coach?
He was with the Padres.
That's a couple degrees away.
He was in the Dodgers.
I'm just Denny's
not saying that's a positive.
I know he's not. People skills, I believe he can handle the job. And I know Chris pretty well. I've done several interviews with him. I've spent time with him at the University of Michigan. And I think that he has people skills that will transfer to the pro game. We'll see. I could be 1,000% wrong. Listen, I think he's going to be a very good professional coach.
I'll point something out to you. Mr. Mize hasn't got anybody out yet since he got here. I mean, the only place he gets out is when he leaves the ballpark at night. Now he's out in his car, his $100 million car. My point is this. If he doesn't come out of college with some real good numbers, then he's wasting everybody's time. I just don't see how a guy can make the jump from an amateur sport, and come into the major leagues and be a pitching coach. I'm sorry. I know an awful lot about pitching, and I'm yet to hear somebody coming out of high school, college, anybody that really understands a slider, a curveball, a forkball, any of those pitches. Most of these guys who are college coaches don't know how to throw the pitch. They do not know how to throw the pitch.
Well, respectfully, I'll disagree with you because he's done it. He's done it at the professional level. He didn't have the skill set to get himself to the major leagues, but he's gotten a number of other guys into the professional game. Trust me when I tell you, he understands exactly what a slider, fastball, two-seam, four-seam,
you know,
changeup do and how to throw them. And I believe I know that at the major league level, a lot of it is getting that pitcher to believe in himself every fifth day and transfer that to the mound. So you prepare them in between and you send them out to the mound as well-armed as they can possibly be. And he will send his pitchers to the mound prepared to be successful.
Just do me a favor. Send me a list of 6 or 7 guys that he has made pitchers.
Well, that's not fairly asked, Larry. That off the top.
There's
three guys drafted from the University of Michigan in the last year of the team that went to Omaha that are playing professionally now. He would, like I said, he did numerous other things. He has not had that long a coaching career at the University of Michigan, but he does have professional coaching background. He does have professional scouting background to evaluate talent. He's a good friend of AJ Hinch from many years back, and he's been around the professional game. He understands the way the game works.
Well, that's my other pet peeve. Whenever a manager takes a new job, he brings his friends with him.
Well, that's life. You know, if you run a Burger King, you hire people. You know, Larry,
I know what you're saying,
but that's life. Larry, do you know AJ Hinch? Have you ever met him before?
I have not. No, I don't know AJ.
I was going to ask you what's wrong.
I've heard great things about him. I've heard a lot of very good things about him from people that I trust. And I think Chris Fetter was a very good hire for the Tigers at this point in time.
Well, I'll tell you what we do. We'll give him a year on the rope. We'll see what happens within the next 12 months.
Right.
And we'll make a decision then and whether we fire him or keep him.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Well, you folks have heard very good things here about Feldman Automotive.
Yes,
isn't that a great segue? Give me some credit for that.
Thank you.
Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer with 5 locations: Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman, in fact, has 9 total locations, and those include Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. And Feldman also has Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter, that's in Waterford. They're known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. So you buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, and then you relax with their exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back to them guarantee. And how about this for a kicker? They will give you credit, guaranteed approval. You can find just what you're looking for at one of Feldman's 9 locations we mentioned. Their massive inventory is unmatched in Metro Detroit. And you can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com for an effortless, hassle-free experience. Power Home Solar is America's fastest-growing solar energy company. It's based right in Metro Detroit, and every one of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels is made right here in the USA. With solar energy from Power Home, you're going to save money, help save the environment, and never again suffer a costly and infuriating power outage. Partnering with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems, you'll be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for all your in-home energy needs. Yeah, you're going to lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages for good. Power Home even has financing starting at just $99 a month. So call them at 1-800-POWER-90 and you'll save an additional $2,000. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So I want to pick up on something Mr. Sorensen alluded to briefly a moment ago. No. This is good news for you, Larry, as a Michigan alum and all the Michigan fans. Juwan Howard has got a commitment from Musa Diabate, a five-star big man from Florida's IMG Academy. And this happened Monday nationally right after we finished the show, so we couldn't talk about it. He's 6'10", 215, number 20 overall recruit in the nation. But, Larry, again, questioning the motives and the guidance at the University of Michigan and the values of same. This kid is from France. Everybody else won. I mean, not everybody. Kentucky did. I didn't see the Duke or Michigan State had him on their recruiting list. Why not? Perhaps the young man's English is not so good. So I went to YouTube to hear him interviewed, and he speaks decent English. But Larry, how can a person not totally fluent in English, A, even be accepted at one of the great universities in the world, Michigan, and B, expect to hack it academically? Could you answer that for me, please?
I would assume the same way that any other foreign student that comes into the University of Michigan or any other campus in the country does when they come from another country. They study, they learn it, they find help, they figure out a way to do it. We don't know exactly how much English he knows.
I told you, I listened to an interview. I mean, yeah, he speaks decent enough English. Larry, well, this is an elite institution.
Speaking a decent amount and understanding a lot are several different things, and you can find ways to express yourself. And by the way, in the hoop, not in the hoop, is a pretty easy translation to make. Rebound, don't rebound. Right. You figure that out pretty good. There's a universal language once you get between the lines. And, guys, figure it out. I'm at a university, Wake Forest University, which is the 27th in the country academically, and the percentage of foreign players in multiple sports across the gamut is extensive. And I don't know how well they all speak English, but they find a way to survive.
Do you remember Eric Fernston? Remember him? He played in the NBA for a long time. Big white kid. So in the old days at the Silver Dome where the Pistons played, our press table was actually, you were right in the huddle a lot of times with these teams. So I'm sitting in the Celtics huddle. They break to come back on the floor. And Chris Ford says to Eric Fernston, "Be on the boards, Fernie." And that was it. So if they tell this kid that in Ann Arbor at Chrysler, that could work out pretty well, right?
Yeah, I had managers came out to the mound to see me when I was pitching and said, "Good luck," and turned around. And so you don't have to be a genius to understand that.
So anyway, yeah, so Juwan's got this. It's the number one recruiting class in the country. They have this five-star forward, Caleb Houston, bunch of four-star kids. What does this portend for the future then? Well, you know, he's only 47. I cannot imagine why Juwan Howard would ever leave his beloved alma mater and go to the NBA. Look up at East Lansing. Tom is 65. Despite this recent positive test for COVID we've heard about, he is fine. He's in great shape. When Mr. Izzo was on this show recently with us, I asked him about perhaps staying long enough to become the winningest coach in college history someday, and he expectedly kind of scoffed at that. But as if it needed any more juice, Michigan State basketball could rival Duke Carolina. And it's going to be a lot of fun, don't you think? Whether they're real students or not. And Larry,
an amazing amount of fun. I can tell you down in the Triad and Tobacco Road, it's a religion down there. There's no question about that. And yeah, Michigan, right. Michigan State, you'll love to see that going again. Let's see how they play out. And Denny, you might agree with me on this one. I'm not a big fan of ratings and five stars and four stars. And same as I'm not a huge
not
fan
either.
Of draft rounds, you know, right. First round, 10th round, whatever, you know, get out, compete, play the game and see where it all shakes out.
Well, all this is going on between Amoni Bates and Jaden Akins. Is it one of the other kids? They're talking about the television that's going to happen. And Bates is going to be facing off against LeBron Bronny James Jr.
Yeah. And the first of those games
against the son of, you know, who, Mr. LeBron James, the greatest basketball player in history.
And the first of those games, I'm glad you mentioned that, Denny, to jog my memory. The first of those games actually comes up again. We record this on Thursday. It's Thursday night. So it's on ESPN2. My recording is already set for that. So it should be very interesting to see how good these kids are. And Larry, how about the great rivalry between Michigan and Arizona State? Did you know they're playing a home-and-home series this weekend?
I did not know that.
You know what I'm talking about, Larry? I'm talking about hockey. Hockey.
Arizona State with hockey.
So I got on the horn. I got on the horn with your boy, your longtime buddy, Bruce Motti, University of Michigan sports publicist. I said, Motti, what's up with this? He said, apparently Arizona State started a club hockey program a couple years ago, and they're going to play Michigan. That could be pretty ugly, I would think, don't you?
You would think, and there's got to be a very good reason that they would schedule that. I didn't know that they had a club hockey team even. But have you ever been to a game up at Yost, a hockey game?
I broadcast games on the radio.
I didn't realize that. That's an amazing experience. I used to love that. I used to love going to those games. College hockey's fun.
And, you know, hey, Arizona State, they're no schlubs, man. They're ranked 15, so...
15 really? Where and in what sport? Women's volleyball? What are you talking about?
Oh, no. Men's ice hockey right now.
No! Yeah. 15th in the country, Arizona State?
North Dakota's number one. Michigan's all the way down at 12, and Arizona State comes in at 15. Now, of course, record is...
And Motti didn't tell me that. I had no clue.
Everybody's record is 0-0-0, so it doesn't really matter too much, but that's the pre-ranking.
Why the hell would you want to play hockey at Arizona State?
Well, I can give you some very good reasons for that. You been to Arizona State in the springtime?
Oh, my God, Lord.
It's a pretty nice place to be.
Beautiful trees. Just great branches.
I know. The only thing I can liken that to is this. When our own Jimmy Carson, a recent guest on the show, as you regular listeners know, when he was traded, he wound up going to Los Angeles, and he was traded to Edmonton. I said, Jimmy, thank God, you're out of Los Angeles. You know, you're in Edmonton where you're a god. You're a superstar. In L.A., nobody even knew who you were. He said, Bob, I like it that way. So maybe if you want to play hockey at Arizona State, it's a good thing that nobody knows who you are. I can't imagine anybody goes to the games. I don't know.
Maybe that's why Mike Trout likes playing for the Angels.
Yeah, listen, and you know what? You can live quietly with all the money in the world, and people out there have more money than anybody else. So
if you blow a save, they don't do donuts in your front yard.
Yeah, and by the way, fellas, against this backdrop, we talk about Michigan State basketball. There's no schedule. As we record this, they have no schedule. Now, Michigan State is going to open up against Duke. Remember, that was supposed to be a big holiday tournament. They canceled that. But they are going to play December 1st. And a lot of people are pissed about this because instead of being in Orlando, where the game was supposed to be, it's actually going to be at Cameron Indoor. So Michigan State's making its fourth trip there, where the Blue Devils have only played twice in East Lansing. So, I mean, I think that's kind of weird, and I understand why some, you know, Michigan State people don't like that. The debut of Joey Hauser comes up. I like to watch the really great college players on TV every year. I bet you guys do, too. So I saw Marquette with Marcus Howard playing a number of times in the last couple of years. So Joey and his brother Sam were prime players on that team. Then when the season ended, I don't know what happened, if they didn't like Wojo or what, both the brothers transferred. Instead of going together, Sam goes to Virginia, Joey goes to Michigan State. They tried to get him eligible and they couldn't, but he's ready to play now. And Michigan State's second game is going to be against Virginia. Isn't that going to be interesting? The Hauser brothers and Denny and Larry and Brandon, let me ask you this. We talk about this COVID thing and protecting the players and in the bubble and so on and so forth. They're going to play basketball, college basketball, where you're guarding a guy without any equipment, without any helmets, without any face masks, and your faces are 8 inches apart. What do you think about that?
Well, number one, they're being tested on the way in a couple of times, on the way out a couple of times. So I think the atmosphere probably in there is pretty nice to be involved in there. So I don't think, long as everybody gets tested the appropriate way, I don't think there's a problem.
But the NFL
proved it.
Well, yeah, but they're wearing, of course, helmets and face masks and stuff, and they're lining up three feet of across from each other. I'm just saying, Denny, that you're probably going to lose a lot of college basketball games, don't you think? I mean, to the schedule.
Bob, I think it's the most miraculous thing I've seen in a long time, how they're managing these teams coming back and playing once one is canceled. That's a full-time job for some guy or two guys or 20 guys. It's unbelievable.
It is incredible.
The way they've taken care of it. It is.
I was on a conference call with Mack Brown, the North Carolina coach, yesterday morning, and he said 6:30 every morning, we call the players to tell them if there's going to be practice or not. And you know, there's guys that are in, guys that are out. But the NBA got it done somehow in the bubble that they played in. I think that there will be a lot of games lost. It's going to be a scheduling nightmare. The ACC just came out with their schedule, and they've got options. They've got, for example, and I'll just pick one out of the air, Wake Forest against North Carolina, either Tuesday the 29th or Wednesday the 30th.
Wow.
You know, and just having an extra day, because when you're tested, if you test positive, that extra day, as we have seen with other athletes in other sports, that extra day can make a difference. So it's going to be a jumble. It's a cluster. No question about that. But at least we're getting something instead of nothing.
I guess. And Larry, remember, though, it's also not just players. So we talked about Tom Izzo tested positive. He's fine. Did you see that Oakland coach Greg Campy and Oakland's women's head coach Jeff Tungate both tested positive for the coronavirus this past week, and both programs have been shut down indefinitely. Campy said in a text message, I'm fine. He says he's fine. Of course he's fine.
Well, he's fine at home in quarantine, but, you know, the different protocols for the different phases and stages of this disease are just something. And as you guys know, my wife, that's what she does. She's director of quality at a hospital. So she's around it every day and reports the numbers to the government. So we pay a lot of attention to that. It's going to be a cluster trying to get the games in. You're going to, as we talked about earlier, teams are going to have different winning percentages, different amount of games, and there's going to be different factors involved. I'm just grateful that we've got what we've got. And what scares me more than anything is that we're going to get 10 years down the road and find out that young players have scar tissue in their lungs and are different the rest of their lives because of what we went through today.
Because I've been saying, too, there's something still coming from this. I don't know what it's going to be.
Well, it's coming now, Denny. Yeah. The second wave is hitting us
we're
now.
We're in stage three right now for the surge.
So I mentioned this.
I believe there's something coming later on, too.
Yeah. I mentioned this.
God forbid, let us get this vaccine out. Please let it work.
By April is what they're saying. I mentioned this little social function. It was no big deal at all that I went to last night in Fort Lauderdale. I met a guy, 48 years old, seemingly normal, seemingly intelligent, who told me, A, that Trump really is going to become president again. He will win the election. And then you know what he told me? You know what he told me? The COVID-19 thing? It's just a hoax.
Yeah.
It's all a hoax.
Oh my
you tell God. Larry, you tell your wife that's what this creep said, because there are people across this country who actually don't believe it exists, who think it's a hoax.
Until it hits you personally,
right?
I don't think you understand it. And I got into it pretty good with one of my dearest friends from Mount Clemens. And as he went through it, he said, I've got to have my business open. And I said, okay, just tell me which one of your family members you're willing to sacrifice for this.
Right.
Your mother, your father, grandma, grandpa, your wife, or one of your kids. Which one are you willing to sacrifice?
Yep.
It's tough. Fellas, I hate to do the necrology on our show, but we must. And this is particularly horrible. We're talking about deaths from COVID and so on and so forth. Former Central Michigan wide receiver Titus Davis, who set CMU's all-time receiving yards and TD records, died on Wednesday from a rare form of kidney cancer. He was 27. He played for the Chippewas from 2011 to 14, holds all-time records at CMU as a receiver for career yards, career touchdowns, single-season touchdowns. I mean, a great player and reportedly a great kid. He was the first player in FBS history with 8 or more receiving touchdowns in 4 seasons. And how many of you remember the amazing 2014 Bahamas Bowl? Central Michigan trailed Western Kentucky 49-14 going into the fourth quarter, but scored 34 unanswered points, capped by the final play of regulation with 1 second left and the Chippewas on their own 25-yard line.
Here we go. Last chance. What are you going to do? Cooper Rush will throw it in the air and look for a whole lot of help. Ball is caught.
Oh, no!
To the 15, it's lateral again. Is that still alive? That's Titus Davis. Did he turn the corner? And Kenneth assumes the unthinkable with 1 second left has happened.
So Titus Davis' touchdown makes it 49-48. Ex-Michigan State quarterback Dan Enos, who was the head coach at Central, then goes for 2 points to win it and failed. Quarterback Cooper Rush, by the way, threw 7 touchdown passes in that game, setting an all-time NCAA record for a bowl game. And he said, I quote, "Life is too short. Titus Davis is one of the best players and competitors I have ever been around," end quote. Cooper's now with the Cowboys. And Davis's brother, Corey, who was a great receiver in his own right at Western Michigan, is now with the Tennessee Titans. Fellas, you never know in life. A name you don't recognize, I'm sure. Kentucky offensive line coach John Schlarman died just today, Thursday, after a prolonged battle with cancer. He was 45 years old. News reports say he was beloved by his players and fellow coaches. He served as an inspiration, given the way he continued working throughout his diagnosis of a rare form of cancer of the bile duct. He didn't miss a practice, shuttled back and forth from Lexington, Kentucky to Houston to get treatments. Drake Jackson, one of his offensive linemen, told ESPN in March that Schlarman was and remained the funniest person in the building throughout all this. Mm-hmm. My heavens. Finally, last but not least, Hall of Famer Tommy Heinsohn. Denny, my guy, you guys were both big stars in the same era. I'm sure you must have crossed paths at some point. Tommy Heinsohn died this past week. He was 86. Won 10 NBA titles over his 20 seasons as a player coach, and then later on as a broadcaster for the Boston Celtics. Got to say goodbye to our radio audience down listening in Toledo. Thanks so much for being with us and hanging with us, folks. And the rest of the podcast, you'll go to our website. You can hear it as we do the mailbag and talk to Dan Pohl. You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Time now for Denny McLean's favorite. It's our mailbag, and we're on Twitter. You can tweet Denny at MU2Denny. At Larry Sorensen, at Bob Page Sports. You know, I like to think of our audience as educated, sophisticated, and I know most of you out there actually are, but we do have a few sniggering frat boys. On our recent podcast with guest Jim Miller, I wrote in the show tease, quote, "The ex-MSU and NFL quarterback cum radio star joins us, C-U-M. Yes, boys, we all know what that means in the vulgar sense, but it's a Latin word. That also means combined with, for instance, Larry Sorensen, ex-Michigan star, cum or cum, either pronunciation is correct. Larry Sorensen, ex-Michigan star, cum Major League Baseball pitcher. So are we good on this now? God, unbelievable. A lot of comments on our interview with Mike Embrick from the last show.
Can I tell a quick Jim Miller story?
Sure you can.
I was doing the sidelines for the University of Michigan football 3 years and play Michigan State. Michigan State upsets Michigan in East Lansing, right? And Miller's the quarterback. Big comeback. So I go over to the other sideline and I grab him by the shoulder pads and said, "Can I get you on the field right after the game?" He was the star of the game. He said, "Yeah, no problem." Now the game ends and he's sprinting for the tunnel. And so I'm chasing him down the field, right, running behind him. And he's just getting ready to go into the tunnel. And I grab him by the shoulder pad and I pull him back. And I said, "Jim, can we do that interview?" He said, "Sure." I turned the microphone and I said, "With Jim Miller." He said, "We kicked their ass. We kicked their ass." And at the time, that was pretty scandalous, boys, back in the early 90s.
Back in the day. And then the invention of podcasts, and you can say a lot of shows, we don't say anything you want to. So back to the Mike Emmerich comments, Detroit forever, that's what he goes by. The Doc Emmerich interview was epic. He didn't want the interview to end, and neither did I. You guys need to get Doc back on the show again. Good job. Tim Henske says, "Fun interview. I had no idea Doc wasn't Canadian. He was very genuine, and I think I appreciate him a bit more now." Iffy the Dopester, Denny's boy, says, "Splendid show today. I could listen to Doc for hours." Unnamed texter, "Mike Emmerich was phenomenal. I love how he took over the interview early and flipped it on you guys. He's amazing. It was a great get for you." Gary Moore says, "The guy's ability to follow and describe the fast-paced action is unparalleled." And he sounds like he's a terrific guy, too. He is, Gary. I'll vouch for that. Ron Grubb says, "They say three in the booth doesn't work. Well, No Filter Sports proved it does. As Eli, Bob, Denny, and Fred Heumann recapped the weekend in sports and interviewed Doc Emmerich. Such a great show. No one except Denny wanted the podcast to end. 5 stars on that one." Hey, look, Ronnie, as I explained on Twitter, we older guys have prostate issues. I just think Denny had to go to the bathroom real bad at that point. That's the only, isn't that right, Denny? That's the only reason you wanted the Doc
Emmerich. No, Bob, it wasn't, but the interview was 45 minutes. I know Doc.
People loved it.
Bob had to be somewhere in 3 days. He was trying to pack his
Doc suitcase. Didn't want it to end.
Well, now, we'll ask Doc next time.
Yes, all right. Now, on Eli's scoop, his source at the University of Michigan telling him that Harbaugh is out at the end of this year, as we reported on the last program. Listener Matt Baddish wants to know, was that Eli's same source that had Jeff Bezos scoop that he was buying the Lions? You can email us, asknofilter@gmail.com. Here's David Jones, who says, I really enjoyed your discussion on the last show on paying college players and their profiting from their likeness. While I hadn't heard about the new proposed likeness rule, I find it hard to argue against it. But look, when it comes to flat out paying them, I really enjoyed what Fred Heumann said. You want to see real corruption when discussing paying them? I wholeheartedly agree and would like to even take it a step further. You want to see the rich get richer? The talent gap that exists now, for instance, Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame versus the rest of the country, it's only going to get bigger when they add cash to the recruiting process, end quote. Larry, you're a former star college athlete. Where do you stand on all that?
I think that they need to find a way to have some equity for the players if they're going to be selling their likenesses. I think it's such a complicated topic. I think that there are people, very smart people, that have spent a really long time trying to figure it all out, and it goes beyond the scope of anything that the group of us and the group of listeners could put together for people that have examined it. What do you do with insurance payments? Who pays for that? If a player is getting paid while he's at the university, who pays his insurance? You know, it's a very deep topic, and a lot of people have spent a long time in it, but I think the players deserve some equity out of it.
Steve Rickard says, I just caught up with the Steve Smith and Jim Miller shows. Larry, we had your old buddy, Michigan quarterback Steve Smith, on, if you didn't hear
that. Is this the last one, Bob?
No, just one more after this. Denny, we'll let you go after that. Okay. So Steve says, it was so great hearing from those guys. You should try to get Rich Rod or Brady Hoke on. Rich Rod does a podcast, I didn't know this, called Hard Edge Football. Brady'd be hard to get, being that he's a coach, but he's traveled all over the place since leaving Michigan. Great idea. I'd like to get Lloyd or Mo on. I don't think they talk to us, because we'd have to ask him a lot of, you know, tough questions about that. And Denny, finally, from the mailbag, Dom Vitale, Dick's nephew, and you know this, he's been on before, he's played professional golf. He writes just some fun facts and corrections for Denny and Eli. First of all, Augusta National plays 7,768 yards. Denny claimed on the last show, it's a pitch and putt golf course. It is not a pitch and putt golf course.
When I played it 25 or 30 years ago, it was a different golf course. They make the golf courses start to fit the equipment, not the other way around. So the equipment has to be adjusted as the further they go with a golf course, that's what they do with it.
Dom continues, there is no rough on the golf course. So when Denny says the rough will be thicker playing there in the fall, that's also false. There's fairway and pine straw, no rough. No answer to that one.
He's absolutely wrong. Go ahead.
Okay. And then you guys also told Bob, when he asked if Tiger or Phil could possibly win, quote, Tiger is done. He can't win. He doesn't play enough, end quote. Let me remind you that he is the defending champion from last year. Great analysis, laughing out loud. Stick to old time sports stories, please.
Thank you very much.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, it's a perfect segue to our guest on today's show. You know, most of us have nicknames, but how many of us are born with a nickname and then go by a formal name? Dan Pohl was actually born Danny Joe Pohl. Sounds like a NASCAR driver in Mount Pleasant, Michigan in 1955. Since golf in Michigan is about a six-month deal, while it snows the other 6 months, Dan became one of the great all-around athletes in mid-Michigan history, also earning all-state honors at Mount Pleasant High School in baseball and basketball. He went to Arizona to play golf, and in 1985 was inducted into the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame. He won two Michigan Amateur Golf Championships in 1975 and 77. Then he turned pro in 77 and joined the PGA Tour in 1978. He won two tournaments on the PGA Tour during his career, both of which came in 1986 when he finished fifth on the money list. He won the Colonial National Invitation, in which he beat the late Payne Stewart in a playoff, and he won the NEC World Series of Golf. Danny Pohl had 70 top 10 finishes, including more than a dozen second or third place finishes. His career was still ascending in 1987 when he posted the lowest scoring average on the PGA Tour and won the Varden Trophy. But the following year, Danny began to suffer a series of injuries, starting with lower back surgery in 1987. He was never quite the same as a golfer. Still, he had seven top 10 finishes in majors. And golf fans remember well, his best finish in a major was second at the 1982 Masters in Augusta when he lost to Craig Stadler in a playoff.
Welcome to the final round of the 1982 Masters. Dan Pohl, right in the thick of things at 4 under.
Ken Venturi, Dan's putt is one that looks like it breaks left, but we've seen many putts from that side of the hole today stay on the high side, the right side of the hole.
Well, there's a big difference between putting this putt and putting if this was the 10th hole during play, because he can hit it much firmer, because if he doesn't make it, there's no tomorrow.
Not to be.
It will go to 1982 Masters champion Craig Stadler.
Well, Dan Pohl has since moved back to Michigan from Arizona. I mean, that's kind of ass backwards. Who does that? And golf nut Eli says Dan's Polecat golf course up in Mount Pleasant has been redone. And Eli says, I'm told it is fantastic. Dan Pohl, welcome to the program. Do you still, after all these years, relive that 82 Masters playoff?
I had forgotten all about it until you just ran that thing by. First things first, I got to put you on. I'm gonna start you, and I'm gonna put you on as my marketing manager. That was pretty good stuff there, my friend. So
I'm a professional broadcaster. That's what I do.
I appreciate the accolades that you brought forward. But yeah, you know what? I'm brought up. I mean, it's brought up. Obviously, you get close to the Masters in April. I'm usually getting calls. In fact, besides this event that I'm doing with you today. This podcast, I've got another interview about the Masters this afternoon, one tomorrow morning, and one Saturday morning. So I think people want to hear about not only what I, experienced or the experience there, but also, my thoughts on, the new young players and how, can a first-time player win there, type of things like that. So, yeah, I love hearing about it and don't have a problem with talking about it because, you got to get there to – it's like we were just talking off before we came on. You got to get to the, whether you're the Buffalo Bills, you get to the Super Bowl, or whether you're, the Tigers getting to the World Series, you got there. You had a chance. So that's all anybody can ask for in any sporting event.
Dan, give us an overview as to why Augusta is so tough.
Well, it's a combination of things, guys. It's a ball strikers. I mean, they talk about the driving and, the longer you can hit it, obviously, the shorter, shots you have in. But really, it's a position on the greens. And what I always told people, I said, the guys who are successful there are putting the ball in the right place to putt it. Their distance control is on. Their spin control of their irons is on. And so, the Augusta from day to day, even though the greens, because of the sub-air system and everything, will be very consistent, it's a potential for a flyer lie, not spinning it. The hole locations dictate, whether you attack or not. And if you short side yourself at Augusta, normally you're going to make bogeys. So, there's a variety of reasons, but I think, if you go right back to really good iron players, we've seen a Mike Weir, and you've seen shorter hitters, Zach Johnson, people like that win there. Because they're able to control their irons and give themselves opportunities on the greens.
How's the golf course going to play with the conditions it's going to be played in now? Because we've never had a tournament in the fall. How's the golf course going to play? Harder?
Well, it just depends. Obviously, with the rain they've got overnight and into the morning, this morning shift or the first shift is going to have to really recognize spin control and whether they've got flyer lies, is the ball collecting a little bit of mud on it, things like that. And, if you've got a hole like number 11 where, depending on where the pin is in the left corner maybe, and you don't know if the ball is going to fly left or right, there's going to be some indecision. And there's going to be some really shots that aren't going to be aggressive for that specific reason. Now, there's a lot of factors this morning that are going to kind of change the way this golf course plays, because nobody has ever started on the back nine in their round. With the two tee setup now and threesomes off both tees, starting on number 10, especially if Tiger and them, would have been, at 7:33, you've got 10, 11, and 12. That stretch that could either dictate a good round or create a bad round right out the box. And so, to me, this golf course and the conditions are going to be determined a little bit on the miss hits and the ability to maybe get a break where that ball doesn't take off and, fly on into the water and, you know, bring double bogeys into the equation. So some difficult choices for these guys to play today.
You've got some pretty fond memories going around there, starting at around 13, don't you? I talked with our mutual friend Todd Anson yesterday, and he was saying, like, eagle, eagle, birdie, birdie, going through a four-hole stretch through there.
Yeah, well, we always believe, most people believe, the front nine is where you hold on, and for a couple of different reasons. You know, number one might be the toughest starting hole in golf when it comes to a major championship. It's the, you know, tough drive and, you know, a tough green to get to, and you try to, you know, make sure that you don't shoot yourself in the foot on the front nine. And then you go to the back nine, and there's some stretches where you can get it going, especially what you just said, Larry, was 13, 14, 15, and 16. With the two par fives that, you know, are really gettable. And in 82, I was kind of just strolling along on Saturday, not doing a whole lot of good stuff. I shot 37 on the front nine, went around, parred the first three on the back, and then all of a sudden 13, I hit a good iron, made eagle, hold a pitching wedge on 14, hit a good iron and a putt on 15 for eagle, and then birdied 16. So in that four-hole stretch, I was six under, which put me right into the mix. You know, kind of one of those where you didn't know, you know, you just made the cut, you were moving along, and then all of a sudden, you know, something good happens and you shoot 67. Now you're right in the hunt.
Now, how the hell do you guys remember this stuff? I've covered a lot of PGA Tour events. We're sitting in the press tent. They'll bring somebody like you into the tent, and the PR guy will say, "All right, Dan, take us through the round." You're talking about 70 shots or 68 shots, and you remember every one of them, and you remember all of these shots all these years later.
Yeah, we don't remember anything else.
Isn't that the truth?
You recollect what you know, it's kind of like talking about what you know. I mean, you know, I imagine that Denny can talk about those 31 wins that he had and a lot of different things. You guys can go back and, you know, when you're into whatever sport or whatever activity you're into, you tie into that. There's obviously certain things that you try to forget, but in that case, when you can remember those stretches like that and those golf courses, you know, I go back to the Ryder Cup in 87 with Jack at Muirfield and talk about, you know, playing with Arnold Palmer at Bay Hill in a couple of his events. And, you know, those are things that you're not going to forget as a young kid from Mount Pleasant, Michigan. I mean, you know, I always tell people, I said, you know, the golf was great, but the people I met and the experiences I had, I mean, you go back to the Crosby and I'm paired with, you know, Clint Eastwood and Glenn Campbell and Jack Lemmon and Arthur Ashe and, you know, who in the heck is go back and the small town guy from Mount Pleasant, Michigan is ever going to have those type of experiences. So, you know, the finishes on the tour and the accolades you get from having a decent career, I would never say that I was, you know, anything more than a really good player. I did, you know, did have my stretches where I would have matched myself against anybody. But I like to talk about those experiences and those meetings and those opportunities to sit with guys, the Gatlin brothers, and sit and listen to them sing with, you know, like I said, Campbell. And, you know, I came up, I'll tell you a quick story. I was playing at the Pebble Beach or the old Crosby and at the Cypress Point. We come up on 15, and I'm with Clint Eastwood and Peter Uberoff at the time. And up on the tee is Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, who was else? You know, all these huge guys that you know, we would dream of meeting, icons of entertainment. Sat and listened to them.
How about Joey Heatherton?
At that point in time,
that was off the course, Denny.
But I did play with Dinah Shore after I won the World Series of Golf. She was very representative of the World Series of Golf in Akron, and I got to play her with the defending champion at Firestone the next year. So that was pretty cool.
You won a pro-am with Dan Marino, correct?
I did. Yeah, Dan and I became very close friends. I played with him a couple of years there. Finished second the first year I played with him and won the next year. And, you know, that's something that, again, is things you can't put on, you know, you can't even put a price tag on the people that I've met and the experiences I've had, guys.
Yeah. Well, you talk about being a boy from Mount Pleasant, Michigan. So let's go back to your first Masters. You're on the first tee. You're ready to go. Tell me with whom you played. And were you scared feces-less about to hit your first shot at your first Masters?
You know, the difference is that I don't remember exactly who I was playing with in rounds. I know that I was paired with Watson in the final round, who was the defending champion. So you kind of remember those things. I know that Morris and Tulski, I do believe, might have been who I played with the first round. But, you know, I was not scared because I was really playing good then. I mean, I'd come off of, a couple of third at the PGA and had been playing very well and really felt like I, you know, deserved to be there. You know, almost won the Crosby in 81, I finished second. So it wasn't like that. I think once you get on the golf course is when you really start to understand what the Masters is all about, because you start hearing the roars from different areas of the golf course. You start to really believe that this is where it's at. Now, one of the things I was really fortunate at is that Fuzzy Zeller and John Mahaffey and Hubert Green, we were all on the same Max Fly staff together. And we had played some practice rounds and things. So when you're playing practice rounds with Fuzzy Zeller, playing the par three with him and Hubert, gives away all your golf balls and throws. By the time you get done, you're lucky to have clubs. But you start to understand that it is just, you know, you're fortunate to be there. And I think the most interesting portion was, guys, at that point, you knew that the top 24 got an automatic exemption back to the Masters. And you go in there, especially the first timer, going, you know, you're in awe. How do I get back here? How do I start to, you know, how do I make sure that this is part of my schedule every year? And, you know, fortunately, I only played there seven times in tournaments, but I finished eighth the next year, but never put myself in that same position. It was almost like the more comfortable I got with the course, the worse I played. I didn't play bad. It's pretty easy to play mediocre there and shoot 70, you know, two or three, but I never had those rounds where I did what I did in 82.
Bobby Knight and Fuzzy Zeller. I was in a tournament, a charity tournament down in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Mad Anthony's tournament at Fort Wayne Country Club?
Yeah.
Couple different times. The year I played, Foster Brooks was the inductee into that.
You're kidding.
Go ahead with your story, though. That's great.
So anyway, I'm playing golf with these two guys. We had threesomes that day because of rain or something. And I swear, and you'll recognize this real quick, I think, I swear I was playing with a helicopter. Every time Bobby had hit a bad shot, guess what went flying? A 2-iron or a 3-iron or a 4-iron. I mean, Jesus, we had a duck every time he hit a bad shot, and he hit plenty of them.
Well, you know, it's tough to hit 2, 3, and 4-irons anyway, and I honestly tell people now the most clubs I ever broke in my bag was a 4-iron, because I'd hit a good drive and then have a 4-iron to a par 5 and hit some squirrely shot, and I'd snap it over my knee. So I've got a lot of sets that are left over from my career that don't have 4-irons in them.
and spread out in trees and lakes all around the country, right?
Exactly. Exactly. People are pulling them in from their fishing, and they're all of a sudden they're pulling in a some sort of a 4-iron Mizuno or Max Fly or whatever I was with at that point. But
Dan, standing on the tee box was a pretty comfortable place for you. You led the tour in driving a couple of years in 80 and 81 at 280 in 81. So was that the most natural place for you? Was the driving, was that the most comfortable part of your game? And what do you think about the way the guys are hitting it today?
Well, yeah, it certainly was. I was probably considered, I think Greg Norman was the best driver of the golf ball, both distance and straightness of my era. There was a couple other guys that came along, Davis Love and people, but there was nobody when I wanted to hit it that could out-hit me, even going into until John Daly came on board. I was probably considered, and I based that upon club head speed, guys. I mean, I was running in the 122 to 126 mile an hour club head speed with my driver with a wooden head and a 43 and a quarter inch steel shaft. So I was creating a lot of, you know, force coming into the ball. Hmm. Now, these guys today with the technology, and listen, you still got to create a lot of speed, but they're not creating any more speed than I did overall. You know, when I hit in long drives, I don't bring it up that much, but we used, Merrill Lynch used to have long drive hitting contests on Tuesday before the, you know, at the tournament site. And I won 9 of 10 of them with never less than 335 on the drive. So, you know, when you wanted to let it go, you could, you know, I could let it go. But technology mostly has let these guys two things. It's allowed them to match up the release point to square that club up as best it can be with this kind of speed that they're creating. And number two, the off-center hits still go a long ways. You know, you go back in the day with a wooden head, and if you missed it on the toe or heel, it was not going anywhere. It was like somebody shot it out of the air with a gun. And so the ability to hit it longer is also about making solid contact back in our day, when now the metal heads, the way the dispersion rate and the way the heads are, you know, the absorption out onto the toe and the heel, they're getting the response. Somebody like Bryson DeChambeau, you know, creating that kind of, you know, torque in the shaft and speed, you got to wonder, number one, how long it can last. You know, the body, you know, if you go back to our days, guys, remember, you can't pull fat. So my motto is, you know, I'm not going to get too muscular because I can't pull fat. But if he's allowing that shaft being bowed out to respond and come back and actually decrease increase the squareness of the impact area as best you can. Because
Denny McClain's been wrong more than once on this show, I guarantee you. And he said on our last show that DeChambeau was not going to win this tournament. What do you think?
I don't think he will. I don't think, not because of his driving prowess. I think there's just other players that have the entire game. I don't like the way DeChambeau plays his short irons. He's not a very good 9-iron, 8-iron, you know, wedge, sand wedge player. And, you know, I think there, even if he allows himself, you know, to go at the third green and, you know, hitting it over that green, he might just pitch it back over the other side. So I think there's a place at Augusta to play smarter and get the right position off the tee rather than just bombing it. Just because you hit it a long ways on 15 doesn't mean that the left trees don't come into play. You know, if you hit a drive on 13 and you got to put it at an angle that he has to go at down that left side, he brings that entire left tree line into play off the drive. And so if he pulls one a little bit or bleeds it way to the right, who knows whether or not, you know, driving distance is only about, do I have the good angle after that? Yeah. Can I put the ball in the position? And I believe, again, and that's why a Zach Johnson and a Mike Weir and guys like that who are great sand wedge players don't necessarily have to go at par fives to make birdies. The question is, if he doesn't drive it good, where's he at?
Yeah. Well, DeChambeau leads the tour in distance at 344, but none of the top four are in the top 10 in accuracy. So they're not putting the combination together. But, you know, the size of these guys now is changing too with workouts. You made reference to the fact that you can't pull fat, and and that's a portion of the golf game that's changed today too.
There's no question that the ability to, you know, maximize strength, flexibility, all those eating habits. I mean, you know, they got teams. You know, they got a group that is working with them. I mean, you know, Lanny Watkins said it best. He's, you know, I had him on our radio show a couple of different times. Says, Polecat, you know, in our day, the psychiatrist that we went to, it was the bartender. You know, and now these guys talk through things. They get off of a golf course and they're stretching, they're doing all the things, which is great. The money is so astronomical that, you know, you have to take advantage of it while you can. So long careers, that's what will be interesting, is how some of these players, Brooks Koepka, with the amount of, you know, muscle he has on him, he's already had some knee issues, he's had some stuff, you know, go on. You know, will it increase, you know, as these guys get more, you know, physically fit? There's a difference between physical fit for you know, playing linebacker and also, you know, getting a year long of golf. I mean, it's just, I think the flexibility strength has to be there. I think you have to be able to let the muscles, you know, relax every once in a while. But, you know, Bryson's obviously right now, he's on a different, you know, channel. He's turned to the, you know, some channel that most of us, you know, wouldn't follow. But, you know, I wish him the best. I just don't know if just hitting a ball, and that shows with long drive guys. I mean, there's not any long driver, you know, that's on the national log drive scenario that's ever played the tour, you know. And so
how about this for a Detroit named Danny? Big Cat Williams.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Big Cat.
I'm sure he played with Big Cat.
I was one of the first guys that did some stuff with Big Cat. He used to, you know, hit a ball through a, you know, the telephone book or the yellow pages and, you know, played a few different rounds with him. Big Cat was, you know, a good player. Bobby Wilson from Dallas. There's a lot of guys that could play, but at that level, they were gearing up for those long drives. And so for Bryson, Danny, I think it's trying to figure it out.
Danny, how did you decide on a golf career? Where did that come from versus baseball? Because you were a pretty good baseball player too.
Well, I think you have to make decisions that make sense for you. And when I was, you know, I mean, I was good. I mean, I mean, listen, All-State in Michigan, you know, I had an 0. something near ERA. I felt like I could have probably thrown somewhere, but I was a hitter. I like to be able to, you know, get on the bases. But I really liked, after playing tournament golf and playing, you know, at a high level in high school, I recognized that I liked the individual aspect of it. I liked the ability to be in control yourself. You know, you could throw a good game. I don't have to tell Danny that. You could throw a two-hitter and get beat 1-0. You feel bad about it, those type of things. And I really felt that the golf was the challenge that I needed to keep me motivated, you know, and really going to Arizona. That's why I picked Arizona. I needed to get out of Michigan to really give myself an opportunity to play other courses, to challenge myself. When I played at Arizona, I played against Stadler when he was at USC and Scott Simpson at USC. Played against all these Oklahoma State and Brigham Young and all these great players from the West Coast on courses that I wasn't familiar with. I grew up on bent grass. Now I'm playing common Bermuda and Poana and Kikuyu grass and hitting balls into ice plant, which I don't recommend, by the way. Don't hit it into ice plant. It doesn't come out very well. So I really felt like as I got going in at Arizona, was playing against players out of Arizona State and that were moving on and you know, making a name themselves in golf, that I made the right decision. I felt like I was challenged every day. I changed my grip when I was a sophomore in college, and really made, that's where I kind of started to make the strides. I was controlling the ball much better. My iron play became, you know, what it was. It was with the strength that I had and the power that I had, I also had to be able to become a better, you know, wedge player, better, you know, mid-range player. That's why I tell people now, I said, I don't hit iron shots full. I really control the distance and control the trajectory with speed. And I really became a master of that, you know.
You're 65, you've been playing some on the seniors tour. I mean, I can't imagine any life that's more fun to have been a great golfer. You know, you slew all your dragons, or you tried, and now you guys are just traveling around telling war stories and having some laughs and playing.
Well, the Champions Tour started out as that, you know, when Miller Barber and Arnold and all those guys, it was basically an exhibition tour, and it was exactly for that. Now the Champions Tour now has become just like the regular tour and the business and, you know, it doesn't have that same grouping of players, but you're right. It's the greatest game to be able to, you know, be able to still play, still be able to go out and, you know, do the things. Now, I will tell you, if you've missed three, you know, cuts in a row and your game is terrible and you call home and the kids are sick and your wife's pissed and all that, you know, it's not the greatest job description at that point, guys. But you know, when I can sit down now and come into the pole cat each day at the golf course and you know, kind of reminisce with people and have people come in and say, you know, thanks for what you did in the game, that makes good things. And listen, you guys were at the highest level of your sport, and to win a World Series, Denny, and to, you know, be where you were at, Larry, and Bob, I don't know what the hell you did. Just
highest level of broadcasting, damn it. Have some respect here. Show some respect.
If we don't tell you, Bob will, that's for sure.
Yeah. When you can have those type of memories and still be able to at 65 get out, hit it okay. But, you know, I've had my 12th surgery 3 weeks ago on my back, and I understood at a later age that it probably wasn't going to be in the cards, so I had to find a passion somewhere else. And my passion now is, you know, giving back to the game and being able to talk to guys like you about games that you love. I come down to Detroit Golf Club and played in, some outings with Joey Koser and Ted Lindsay Foundation stuff, and try to give back to the game that way.
That's really cool.
I really wanted to thank you for joining us today. You've been terrific.
Yeah, you have been. Well, but, you know, I do want to ask you this. You say DeChambeau's not going to win. A couple, two-part question. Number one, do you have a favorite in the Masters this weekend? And do you think Tiger and Phil have any chance?
Well, they always have a chance there. You can't take Tiger or Phil out of it just because they get so excited and stuff being there. My sentimental pick, because I think it would be good for the game if McIlroy won. I think it's time for somebody after their sixth time at winning their fourth major and doing that Grand Slam that I think it would be great for European golf. I think it'd be great for the game. So I don't really get into a picking scenario because there's so many great players and just the opportunity. I mean, you could see anybody win, especially under the conditions that they're going to play in. Sure. But I would really, on a sentimental side, even though he's a European on the opposite side of the Ryder Cup and stuff, I really think that would be an interesting and really good thing for the game of golf to have him right at the top, at least, coming down the wire on Sunday.
Mm-hmm, that's cool. Larry, you got great one, stuff. The final one?
That's a great choice. Yeah, you know, the one thing that ran through my head as you were spilling all those names off, and, I could envision you at Pebble Beach looking up there at the next tee. One guy that, with all the people that you've played with, somebody you haven't played with that you said, man, I'd really like to get 18 holes in with him.
Wow. Yeah, that's a tough one because I've got so many people. I'd probably go outside the sporting world. I mean, people ask most people who would they love to play their last group with. My dad passed away last year at 93. I didn't get to play golf with him for like 10 years. He just wasn't able to get out. Obviously somebody like, you know, your last pairing would be your brothers and your dad and just be that sentimental side of it. But I would say that if Jerry Ford called me after winning Colonial, and actually I'll tell you just a quick story if you have it. My now ex-wife answered the phone and said, hey, this is Jerry Ford calling for Dan. I'd like to, talk to him real quick. And she said, oh, yeah, sure, and hung up. So I played in the Jerry Ford Invitational for a long time out in Colorado, but he called back, and he's the only guy in the political arena that actually, from Grand Rapids, Michigan, that called me after a big event win that was pretty cool, but I never did get to play with him. So whether he hit everybody that he was playing with or, whether it was around the two, would say, I think there's guys like that that just showed the quality and the give somebody like myself a call and congratulate me on a win. That was pretty cool. So I would, if I think about it, I could probably put a whole list out of guys. It'd probably be Bob. Bob Page, I haven't played yet. that might be on my wish list also.
I doubt that. I might entertain
you a little
bit.
I will tell you guys this. Anytime you'd like to come up to the Polecat and play, you'd be my guest. I mean, I'd love to see you up. Maybe, Larry, we can get Todd to sneak into town, and you guys can come up, and we can play a quick round of golf up here. I think you'd really enjoy it.
That sounds like a great plan.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
And I'm going to play the 19th hole.
I'll take two aside from you guys, especially if I know you guys. I'll get an idea, Larry, of your game from Todd. Denny, I don't know how you play.
Well, I used to play a lot, but I don't play much anymore. God, I'm 110 years old now, pal.
Well, pitchers are notoriously the best golfers on the team.
Yes, absolutely. So because we got so much damn time between starts.
And guys like that during their prime. So I would love to have you guys up here as my guests.
That'd be great. Hey, Danny, I know you got to go. You're doing a lot of interviews. I don't want to open a can of worms. There's one final question from me. Greatest ever, Tiger or Jack?
Well, Jack. I mean, Tiger came into an era with, you know, again, you can balance it out and you can say, what about the new equipment? How did that affect it? How did the new, you know, strengthening, all that affect what Tiger was doing? Jack, to me, won on so many different golf courses, was a factor, you know, all the time. Tiger, when you talk about playing and winning 9 times or 7 times at San Diego and 5 here, it was like horses for courses. But I thought Jack, you know, if you could compare, I worked for NBC for a while doing ground, and I was able to follow Tiger early in his career. I just always thought that Jack had total dominance and control of, you know, any golf course he would have played. So, you know, you can compare numbers, but can you compare, you know, the way they played a golf course? I mean, Jack could overpower it, or he could, you know, finesse it. And I really never saw any guys like those two that could actually also. Here's the only thing, the difference to me and Tiger and Jack, when you compare them both together, is they're the only guys that I ever played with or saw that could win with their B game and sometimes even their C game. And that's a big difference. Most of these guys have to win playing their best. They could win playing mediocre. That's a huge compliment and a huge way I would compare those guys, is that both of them have set themselves above. Now, if you went to ball striking, you'd go back to Snead, and some of those guys were actually probably better ball strikers. But with Jack, it's pretty hard because I played with him. I was on the Ryder Cup team that he was the captain of. I would be crazy to put Tiger in front of him. Although,
he is Jack. Well, he is Tiger too.
Yeah. It is what it is. And
it is what it is. Know, again, that's exactly right. Well, listen, thank you very much.
Thanks, Danny.
You
were a great
guys.
Guest.
Anytime, you know, probably won't call me during the Quad Cities Open because I only had a couple of top 10s there. But
listen,
anytime
don't
you want to talk baseball.
Don't you
now,
dare badmouth Quad Cities. I played ball there one time.
Yeah.
I give up a home run there.
I want to talk to you guys, you fireball and right-handers. I want to talk to you about that split finger and what made your guys' ball dance around there. I mean, Denny, I was a fan. I love the 68 Tigers. I mean, I got to play in the Jackson event Earl Wilson and, you know, Lolich and Northrup and Stanley. And, I mean, you can have a lot of good teams, but that Tiger team of 68 be pretty hard to not you know, clap for. Let's just say that.
Sure was.
Thanks again, Dan. Good to talk to you, man.
Thanks,
Dan.
Good
day, guys. You take care of yourselves, all right?
Thank you.
Sure
thank
thing.
You very
yeah.
much.
So,
stay safe.
Yeah, so Larry, you see how the show really works. Denny off is in a hurry to end it until the guests start saying, oh, Denny, I loved you so much. I was such a big fan. Then Denny wants to continue to talk on the show. But I thought he was terrific. I really enjoyed that.
He was very good, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Larry, good luck to your Wake Forest Demon Deacons this weekend against Carolina. That should be a pretty good game you're going to do on the radio down there.
Yeah, it should be a very good game, as a matter of fact, and an important game in the conference, which is a little bit different. So it'll be a lot of fun. No crowd again, so that'll be a little bit unusual. Yeah. Some great running backs and two really good quarterbacks.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you, Denny. And Eli should be back on Monday. We'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.